Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, I am beyond jazzed to talk to you about Innistrad Midnight Hunt Preview's new format. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, and we haven't really gotten to do this style of episode in the past couple sets because we had like super elongated preview season for Strixhaven and super truncated preview season for AFR. And now we're back to sort of a normal schedule where we do have like a good chunk of previews, but not the whole picture yet. And we have a little time to speculate, dive into some commons and uncommons that we've seen so far and see if we can't try and like complete a little bit of the puzzle of the landscape of Innistrad Midnight Hunt.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet. Investigate, yeah. As it were.
Ah, I like it. I like it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, a lot of cool stuff returning from the two Innistrad blocks that we've had previously and some sweet like sort of tweaks of things and then some new stuff. So we're going to dive into all the mechanics and look at a bunch of cards today. That's how we're going to run through stuff for this episode. But before we get into any and all that good stuff, a few housekeeping things. First things first is the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where you can go to give back to the show if you so choose. And we say this at the beginning of every new set. The Discord is the place to be if you want to be on the ground floor of breaking open a new format. So if you give back to the show via the Patreon, you get access to the Lords of Limited Discord, which is the best limited tech support on the internet 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's really, really a fantastic community, and we're super excited to sort of just, we're just proud parents at this point, watching the kids go off to college. Like, we're really sort of hands off at this point, Ben, now that the Discord is, 3.5 years old. So it's a really fantastic community if you're interested in getting in on the ground floor of that as the new set comes out in just a little bit. And there's a lot of other good stuff over at the Patreon as well in terms of the, as you move up the reward tiers. So if you're interested in that, if you feel like you get something back from the show, head on over to patreon.com/lordsoflimited and see what works for you. And we also want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they joined. So this week we were welcoming Elliot, Brian, Edward, Jack, Ben, and Jonathan. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. And I also just want to reiterate how awesome the Discord is the first couple of weeks of a format. I use it all the time, trophy channel, you know, getting people's opinions on card evaluations, what they think of the big picture of the format, what's important. It really is one of the best places to talk about the new set if you're interested in trying to solve the puzzle of the new set. Can't recommend it highly enough.
Yeah, I'm going to be leaning hard on the Discord for this set because we haven't announced this on the show yet, but I'm going to be out of the country for like the first week and a half of the set. So I won't be able to play that much, but I will be able to play a little bit, thankfully, due to Arena being on my phone. So I'm looking forward to getting some falling asleep in bed drafts on my phone there. But I won't be able to play that much. So I will be leaning hard on the info from the Discord.
Yeah, we're going to have our first ever Lords of Limited episode without Ethan Sachs.
Yeah, it's going to be
without either one of us. Actually, that's honestly impressive. We made it 225 episodes every week with both of us there.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you always say, and joining me on the line as always. Well, you won't be able to say that after 2 weeks.
Jeez, I'm going to have to get a new intro. It's terrible. Show's also brought to you in part by Channel Fireball, channelfireball.com. Best place to go for anything you need magic related or flesh and blood related or Pokemon related. But if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably getting magic stuff over there. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. And speaking of magic stuff, you know, a new set coming out. The pre-orders aren't up yet, but I imagine they will be up soon. So if you're thinking about getting some Innistrad Midnight Hunt sealed product, consider ordering that from CFB. And there's also other great stuff over there. You know, CFB Pro, I just put out a really cool article on how I would tweak all the cards in AFR to make the format a little more balanced. So, you know, you, I, Alex, we're writing articles every week for the pro side. So if that's something you're interested in, more strategy content over there, anything like that, make sure you use code LOL when you check out to let Channel Fireball know that we sent you over there.
Yeah, that article was really sweet. I enjoyed reading that. I know you said it was quite cathartic to write and it was fun to read.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. So let's dive into the new and returning mechanics from Innistrad Midnight Hunt. Ben, I want to ask you real quick before we get into this. What is your relationship with the plane of Innistrad? How do you feel about the previous two blocks of this format?
I am less jazzed about Innistrad, I think, than the community at large. But I also was not drafting super seriously when Innistrad first came out. And I did do a lot of drafting with my brothers, but I was not on the wavelength of like, what are the top commons? What's the best color? Like, how can I solve this format? Like, I just loved drafting, you know? So I do strongly remember disliking the werewolf mechanic the first time around because it felt like it punished you for stumbling. You know, if you missed your two drop or whatever and the opponent had a two drop werewolf on the play, then their thing flips and is even better. It just felt snowbally. I remember not liking that about the format.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have a really great relationship with Innistrad, the original block. Like, I remember really drafting a ton of that format and listening to LR when Brian David Marshall was on talking about the spider spawning deck. I remember that episode very clearly. And then like drafting that deck a lot. And really, I feel like that was very formative for me as a dirtily Magic player. And I don't remember much about Shadows over Innistrad. I didn't draft that format a ton. I feel like it's so hard to like think about sets before the podcast and after the podcast, just because we have like such a different relationship with Magic now. But yeah, I am excited looking at these mechanics and seeing what is going to come in this format, because I think it's going to, it looks like it's going to be sweet. But I feel like we always say that when we're looking at preview season.
Well, it's because it's a new set. It's definitely going to be sweet. It's just how long it's going to be sweet for. That's the case.
Yeah. So Ben alluded to this, you know, the werewolves, which were flipping, and they've sort of tweaked that a little bit or made it a little bit more like global. So they're introducing day and night, or day bound and night bound, but day and night as well as a mechanic for the format. So when the game starts, it's neither day nor night. And in most games, it will become day first. And the most common way that will happen is if a permanent with day bound appears on the battlefield. So, for example, we have Tavern Ruffian. What's that card do?
It's 3 and a red for a 2/5 human warrior werewolf. And it's got day bound and it says if a player casts no spells during their turn, it becomes night next turn.
Yeah, and that's pretty sweet. And so then when it flips, what happens?
It turns into Tavern Smasher, which is a 6/5 werewolf with Nightbound. And if a player casts at least 2 spells during their own turn, it becomes day next turn. So the flipping happens the same way it always used to, right? Either no spells getting cast during a turn or 2 spells getting cast during a turn. But the difference is the day-night part of it. And so it's a little confusing potentially, but they've got tokens to help you track day and night. So there's actually literally a token that'll be on the battlefield. So when something with Daybound enters, you have the day token. And it literally says on there, as it becomes day, transform all nightbound permanents. And then if a player casts no spells during their own turn, it becomes night next turn. Then you flip that day token over to night. And then it says on the token, as it becomes night, transform all daybound permanents. Permanents enter the battlefield nightbound, which is a cool twist on this. And then if a player casts at least 2 spells during their own turn, it becomes day next turn. So basically, all of these werewolves, once one enters, it's either going to be day or night. And then no matter what time of day it is, day or night, all of the werewolves on the battlefield for you and your opponent are going to be on their day side or their night side respectively. So when it's night, it'll be really powerful to cast those cards, you know, for cheap and have them enter and flip without having to pass the turn. You know what I mean? So you only have to pass the turn once until somebody can double spell.
This feels like a really clean revision, because it was sort of, I remember like, especially around this time when werewolves existed and people were playing in paper, there was also a lot of like rules rejiggering to figure out, is it your responsibility to let your opponent know that like no spells were cast, so they have to flip their werewolves or whatever. This just feels like a really clean way to say like, look, everything is flipped on nightbound or daybound, depending on if it's day or night.
Well, and this was when I learned about APNAP, right? Active player, non-active player, because of whose werewolves transformed first.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was like sort of important with like Huntmaster of the Fells or whatever. Like, does it flip to deal 2 damage before your thing flips to have more than 2 toughness or whatever?
And that's, so for those of you that aren't familiar, APNAP, APNAP, is active player, non-active player. And what that means is the active players, whoever's turn it is, their triggers go on the stack first, and then the non-active player triggers go on the stack. So actually, whoever's turn it's not, their werewolves will transform first.
Yeah, but that's not the case here, right? Everything flips at the same time,
I assume.
Yeah. That's really cool. I'm excited about that. And when I saw this mechanic, I was like, oh, okay, so this is just going to be for like the werewolf stuff. But there's actually other cards that care about whether it's day or night. If it's not day or night yet, it makes it day and then cares about stuff flipping back and forth that aren't werewolves. They're not flipping themselves.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of room for super sweet interactions in Limited.
There's more double-faced goodies as well with the Disturb mechanic. What's going on there?
So Disturb is a mechanic that transforms double-faced cards, but they don't care about day or night at all. So they don't work at all like Daybound or Nightbound. They just have the same, you know, all the Innistrad flip cards have the same sun and moon symbol in the upper left corner. So what Disturb is, it's an alternate casting cost that allows you to cast cards from your graveyard transformed. So for example, we've got Baithook Angler. What's going on there?
So this is 1 and a blue for a 2/1, fine, 2 mana 2/1, little goblin piker, and has Disturb for 1 and a blue, so you can cast it from your graveyard transformed as a 1/2 flying creature, and then if it would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, you exile it instead. This is cool. This is like it's like flashback effectively on creatures, except they come back as a different creature. Like the backside is always different from the front side, but this is just like, that's just a straight up 2-for-1.
Yeah, it's super sweet. I initially thought Baithook Angler was going to transform back and forth with Data Knight so that it was going to switch back into the Baithook Angler, but it is not that busted. So these disturb cards are one and done.
Well, I mean, you could bounce them though, because it doesn't say like if it would leave the battlefield. It says if it would just be put into the graveyard. So you could get it back to your hand and then rebuy it as a 2-1. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. Last up, we've got Coven, which is a new ability word that's used to highlight abilities that get better if you control 3 or more creatures with different powers. So just like pretty clean way to describe that board state happening. And some Coven abilities resolve like different ways. Some of them are going to be triggered abilities, such as we find on Candlelit Cavalry. This is 4 and a green for a 5/5 human knight. And it says Coven at the beginning of combat on your turn. If you control 3 or more creatures with different powers, Candlelit Cavalry gains trample until end of turn. And it already is one of those 3 creatures, right? Because it's a 5/5. So then you need 2 other creatures on the battlefield that have different powers than each other and 5.
Mm-hmm. We've also got some Coven abilities that are activated. So there's Candle Trap, which is single white for an aura. Enchant creature. Enchanted creature has Defender. You prevent all combat damage that would be dealt by enchanted creature. And then if you have Coven, you can pay 2 and a white to sacrifice Candle Trap and exile enchanted creature.
Yeah, and it's worth noting for something like Candlelit Cavalry, which is the creature, that one's going to check on resolution, right? You attack, and then, you know, the trigger goes in the stack, and when the trigger resolves, it's going to look to see if you still meet those conditions. So your opponent could use removal in response to that, but the ones that are activated abilities, like Candle Trap, as long as you meet that requirement, once you put that ability on the stack, your opponent can't, you know, cast a removal spell on one of your creatures to stop that ability from resolving.
There's also a really cool combat trick that Coven appears on. It's Might of the Old Ways. It says 1 and a green for an instant. Target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. And it says Coven, then if you control 3 or more creatures with different powers, draw a card. So you could, so this could like help enable you to get Coven, right? If you have, you know, a 2/2, a 2/2, and a 3/3, well, you can make one of your 2/2s a 4/4. So this is like eating something in combat potentially, and then drawing you a card as well if you have Coven. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it seems like a lot going on, but it's cool that Coven's on all these different types of cards.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And so not only do we have those 3 new mechanics, we also have a couple returning mechanics, which is sweet. So fans of OG Innistrad are going to be happy about Flashback. Not that Flashback was initially introduced there, but it was a big mechanic there. So Flashback is a way to cast a card from your graveyard. You basically get it twice. So you have a way to cast it from your hand, and then it has a cost that you can pay from your graveyard to cast it. And then when you do that, you exile it.
We've also got an ability called Investigate that's returning that whenever a card has Investigate on it or it tells you to investigate, you create a clue token, which is an artifact token that has the ability to sacrifice this draw card. And we've actually got a card here that has both of these returning mechanics on it in Secrets of the Key.
Yeah, single blue for an instant, investigate, and then if the spell is cast from a graveyard, you investigate twice instead, and it has a flashback cost of 3 and a blue. So a lot of mana there, right? 3 mana to draw 1 card and then 8 mana to draw 2. But you could call this Ancestral Recall. It is single blue draw 3 effectively.
You could call this Ancestral Recall if you were crazy. But I mean, the fact that this is split up into installments makes this much better than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, for sure. I have a feeling this card will be pretty sweet. I don't know. I mean, it's like it's kind of nerfed, but a 3 cards like this over installments for a common, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
And it probably has some synergy as well. All right, speaking of synergy, let's take a look at some signposts on commons. It looks like each color pair is getting 2 cards this time around. At least that's what we've seen so far. So we have some color pairs, when we're recording this on the morning of the 6th, some color pairs have 2 already spoiled, some have 1, and then some actually have none so far. But we'll keep refreshing the spoiler to see if anything comes up while we're recording. So what's going on with blue-black to start?
First up, we've got Blade-Stitched Scob, which is blue-black for a 2/3 and gives other zombies you control +1/+0.
So just a clean zombie lord here.
Yeah, and the blue-black definitely gets zombies as a thing. There's a mechanic called decay that we didn't really talk about. It's not a mechanic per se, but it's a thing on zombies.
Yeah, so for decayed, for example, we have this a little further down, but we can talk about it now. There's hobbling zombie. This is a common. It's a 2 and a black for a 2/2 zombie with death touch, and when it dies, you create a 2/2 black zombie creature token with decayed. And so what that means is the creature token can't block, and when it attacks, sacrifice it at end of combat. So you just get like a one-shot 2-2. It can't block, it can attack once, and then once it attacks, either it's going to get eaten, it trades, or you sacrifice it at end of combat.
Kind of cool. I'm into it.
Yeah, let's talk about this right now. So, I mean, we're jumping around a little bit in the show notes, but if we're going to talk about Decayed, let's talk about Decayed. What's your initial read of this mechanic? Because I saw this and I was like, what the heck could this be good for? Why? This seems pretty inconsequential.
My initial thought was sweet, super flavorful. And then I was thinking, like, are there going to be ways to use these zombies? Are there going to be sacrifice outlets? That would be a cool way to use them. Are there going to be ways to get them trample? That would be a cool way to use them. Are you going to be able to build enough of them up to just like overwhelm your opponent with a zombie army? That would be sweet, you know, like that you can just go wide enough that you can alpha strike with 6 or 7 of them and it doesn't matter that they don't come back the next turn. That would be cool. And then are there ways to potentially tap and use them also?
Yeah, and there are a couple cards that I was like, these seem like, again, I was reading these commons and uncommons and I was like, oh, this, I don't really see why these are good. And then it sort of clicked for me that maybe there's the Decayed is for these cards. And we've seen two so far that care about tapping 3 untapped creatures you control. So first up, we've got Siege Zombie. This is 1 and a black for a 2/2 zombie at common. And you can tap 3 untapped creatures you control to have each opponent lose 1 life. And it's important to note that you don't have to tap this. So you could have 6 untapped creatures at like the end of your opponent's turn and just tap them all to have them lose 2 life, you know? So this could be like a little common engine-y thing and definitely takes advantage of Decayed tokens lying around.
And there's also a card called Inventory Zombie. It's single blue for a 1/3 with Defender and has tap 3 untapped creatures you control to look at the top card of your library, and you can put that card into your graveyard. So a little self-mill potentially going on in blue-black, and then a way to use those Decayed zombies as well.
Yeah, and self-mill in a set like this is going to be very good, right? You can find flashback cards, or you can find your disturb cards that are the creatures that you can then like rebuy from the graveyard. So you'll definitely be able to sort of like quote-unquote draw cards with that kind of effect.
Yeah.
The other blue-black card that's been spoiled is Corpse Cobble. It says blue-black for an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice any number of creatures. Create an XX blue and black zombie creature token with Menace, where X is the total power of the sacrificed creatures. And this has flashback for 3 blue-black.
So you're presumably sacrificing your Decayed zombies and stitching them together into a monster that is no longer Decayed.
Oh, yeah, that's a great use of this for sure. Yeah, sacrifice 2 Decayed things. Now you have a 4/4 Menace.
Yeah.
Or sacrifice something in response to removal. So funny on Mythic Spoiler, which is where we have this card linked, the like top card that it's like, this is, maybe this will remind you of this card, is Tend the Pests from Strixhaven. And I'm just like, well, if we're comparing it to that, I don't know if that makes me excited about this card, but I can definitely see its applications with Decayed for sure.
Yeah, it looks sweet. Moving on to blue-white, we've got Devoted Graph Keeper here, and it's looking like blue-white might care about Disturb. So it's blue-white for a 2/1. Creature, human, peasant. When it enters the battlefield, mill 2 cards. Whenever you cast a spell from your graveyard, tap target creature you don't control, and then it itself has Disturb, and presumably the disturbing is going to be the spells you're casting from your graveyard, also potentially flashing things back as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it disturbs for 1 blue-white, and it transforms into Departed Soulkeeper, which is a 3/1 flyer, and it can only block creatures with a flying. If it would be put into your graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. That is a powerful card.
There's so much going on there. Yeah, it has the potential to like draw you into something with the mill 2. It has the potential to be aggressive with the tap ability, and then also just the fact that it's a 2/1 itself coming back as a 3/1 flyer
or flashing back instants. It can be defensive.
Yeah, well, there is another card that blue white has, which is, I think it's been at the talk of the town for potential constructed applications. I'm curious what you think about it for limited. There's Faithful Mending. White blue for an instant, you gain 2 life, draw 2 cards, then discard 2 cards, and it has flashback for 1 white-blue. So it's a nice play, like reverse play on Faithless Looting, right? And instead you get to draw then discard rather than loot first.
This card is excellent, right? With things caring about being in the graveyard, you know, you pitch 2 disturb cards. All of a sudden you're up card advantage, or you pitch flashback cards. This card is strong in this format.
I think this is going to be a really, really good card. I think, yeah, you have the potential to like look at this card and go, oh, this is card disadvantage, right? Because you're just draw 2, discard 2, and then you're down the Faithful Mending. But you also get this as a flashback effect later. And also what Ben's talking about, if you discard things with flashback or with disturb, like you're just up cards, it's going to be good.
Looking at those two cards, I am very excited right now, knowing about zero other blue and white cards to play blue white.
Well, we already know about the like that common 2-mana 2/1 that has Disturb to become a 1/2 flyer. That's good.
Yeah, looks sweet.
All right, let's see what's going on with green black. We've got Diagraph Rebirth, which is 3 black-green for a sorcery. It costs 1 less to cast for each creature that died this turn, and you can return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, and it has flashback for 5 black-green. So 5-mana reanimate and then a 7-mana reanimate.
Yeah, I think this is going to depend on, you know, what kind of goodies there are to reanimate. Certainly if you can self-mill and reanimate something sweet, I'm pretty into this card. It's going to be hard to get it cheaper, right? You don't generally in limited want your creatures to die.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard to kill multiple of your opponent's creatures. But maybe if black has the decayed theme going on, like those decayed zombies can be a way to get this cheaper. That could be sweet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure. I hadn't thought about that. Oh, man. Maybe decayed is just awesome.
Yeah, for sure. It could be. Moving on to green white, we've got Dawnheart Wardens, which is 1 green-white for a human warlock. It's a 3/3 with vigilance, and it has coven at the beginning of combat on your turn. If you control 3 or more creatures with different powers, creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn.
Well, I wonder if green white has a bit of a go wide thing going on. And well, what do you know? Join the Dance is the other uncommon. This is green white for a sorcery. Create 2 1/1 white human creature tokens, and it has flashback for 3 green-white. That's powerful.
Yeah, pretty spicy. So, and it looks like green white maybe is coven also. And then if you're getting tokens, that's going to make it easier to get coven, right? That 1/1 token. Mm. And then you only have to have 2 other creatures once you've got a 1/1 token to trigger coven. That seems super sweet.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that looks great. So I'm super interested to see, like, usually, you know, green white is sort of the fun police in the world of Innistrad, right? Because everything else gets like zombies or werewolves or whatever, and then green white is usually where the humans hang out and try and keep the beasts or the ghouls in check. So looks like green white's gonna have a bit of a go white aggro thing going on.
Yeah, I drafted a lot of green white travel prep back in the day. That and spider spawning are the two decks I remember drafting a lot from Innistrad.
Travel prep was insane.
For those of you that didn't maybe play Magic back then, travel prep was a sorcery that could flashback that put 2 +1/+1 counters on creatures and then flashed back for, it was a green card that flashed back for 1 and a white. So you could get 4 +1/+1 counters spread across creatures from this one card. It was super aggressive.
Yeah, going 2-drop, 3-drop, and then double travel prep was usually GG.
All right, next up in the previews here, we've got Kessig Naturalist. This is the red-green gold uncommon. It costs red-green for a 2/2, and whenever it attacks, you add red or green. Until end of turn, you don't lose that mana as steps and phases end, and it's got Daybound as well. And then on the flip side, you've got Lord of the Ulvenwald. It's a 3/3 werewolf that gives other wolves and werewolves you control +1/+1. And whenever it attacks, you add red or green. Until end of turn, you don't lose that mana as phases and steps end. And then Nightbound as well.
Yeah, this is sweet. You know, one of the things I'm noticing now as we look at this, we're going to look at the red-black one in just a second. It's really refreshing looking at these signpost uncommons and them not being legendary. So, like, you can load up on them, right? You can get rewarded for carving this out as your seed or whatever, or recognizing that red-green is the open deck for you, and then getting, like, hooked up with late-pick Kessig Naturalists. And these will all, like, buff each other, right? Flip side, they're all werewolves, and they're all going to buff each other.
Ooh, that's spicy.
Looking at red-black, this is Vampires. So Vampire Socialite is black-red for a 2/2 Vampire Noble with Menace. When Vampire Socialite enters the battlefield, if an opponent lost life this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on each other vampire you control. And as long as an opponent lost life this turn, each other vampire you control enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. And red, we can jump ahead here maybe a little bit and look at this sort of like life loss or life loss matters theme that red black has going on.
Yeah, there's several cards that care about this. If your opponent lost life this turn, do X. So the first one we see here is Voldaren Ambusher. It's 2 and a red for a 2/2 when it enters the battlefield. If an opponent lost life this turn, it deals X damage up to 1 target creature at Planeswalker, where X is the number of vampires you control.
Holy cow. Like, this feels like it's almost as good of a vampire payoff as the signpost uncommon.
Yeah, it's a lot of things that have to go right, though, yeah? Like, you have to have multiple vampires. I mean, I guess you're dealing one guaranteed because this itself is a vampire, but you have to have another vampire, and you also have to get the opponent to lose life. I don't know. That's a lot of stuff that has to come together. I think this is a good card, but not quite as insane as it looks at first glance.
So we've seen some similar-ish mechanics like this in the past, and the two that come to mind are Raid, which didn't care about your opponent losing life, but it cared about if you had attacked with something this turn. And then we've also gotten Bloodthirst, which did care if your opponent lost life, right? If a creature you control dealt damage to your opponent, then you enabled Bloodthirst for some buffs for things to happen post-combat. And the reasons I bring those up is those add a sort of spice layer to combat, right? When your red-black opponent attacks into you in this format, you're going to have to think about, are they, like, does this attack mean they have a trick? Or does this attack mean they're just trying to enable this life loss matters thing? And so you might see them making some suspect attacks and think, oh no, like, which of these things is it? And do I want to block and potentially call the bluff? Or do I let them hit me and then potentially enable these post-combat cards?
Yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on. There's more of these cards. There's Famished Foragers. 3 and a red for a 4/3. When it enters the battlefield, if an opponent lost life this turn, add a red, red, red. And then you can pay 2 and a red, discard a card, draw a card. It's super sweet that this has an ability on it that you can use that 3 red mana on. Because this reminds me from Cons of Tarkir of Mardu Warshrieker.
Yeah, that was the 3 and a red, 3/3, and it had Raid, right? When it enters the battlefield, if you attacked, you got to add red, white, black to your mana pool. So very similar to this, and I agree. I love that Famished Foragers has a place to put that mana. But just imagine, like, the curve out potential here is insane. If you go 2-drop, 3-drop, and then attack with those, your opponent loses life, you get to play this on turn 4, and then maybe play a 3-drop as well. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, this card is pushed.
Yeah, I've got my eyes on that card for sure. And then there's another card here, Arrogant Outlaw, 2 and a black for a 3/2 Vampire Noble. When it enters the battlefield, if an opponent lost life this turn, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. So it sort of like gives itself a little bit of haste there, right? If they lose life and then you get to play this and also drain for 2. I mean, it seems like the red-black aggro decks can have some nutty draws.
Yeah, for sure. So moving back to those gold uncommons, we've got blue and red here, and blue-red does seem to care about spells, so we'll go through all of those spells matter cards that have been spoiled so far. But the flashback uncommon is Arcane Infusion. It's blue-red for an instant. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal an instant or sorcery card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order, and then has flashback for 3 blue-red.
Yeah, this seems really sweet. And looking at the cards that have been spoiled so far, this is very well supported. So we've got 4 cards here to take a look at. First up is a common, Festival Crasher. 1 and a red for a 1/3 devil. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn. This is just like, what's it called? It's like a mini version of Kiln Fiend. So this gets +2/+0 when you cast a thing. That was 1 and a red for a 1/2, but it got +3/+0. I don't know. This feels like there's some threat of activation here a lot of the time.
Yeah, but I mean, if you don't have the thing, you're only poking in for 1. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Definitely going to be a scary card, for sure. And I think going back to Arcane Infusion, which was the flashback spell, you know, where you look at 4, playing that or playing blue-red, it looks like you're definitely going to want to have a huge density of spells.
Yeah, one of the things that I think blue-red often does is plays like an aggro tempo game, but doesn't have like that, you know, 16, 17 creature count. Like, it's often going to be like 10 creatures, and then you're fueling those creatures with all of your spells, either dealing damage directly to your opponent or whatever. But yeah, you're definitely going to want a huge density of instants and sorceries in this deck, it looks like.
We've also got another creature here that potentially cares about spells. We've got Flame Channeler. This is 1 and a red for a 2/2, and whenever a spell you control deals damage, you transform it. And then on the backside, it is Embodiment of Flame, which is a 3/3, and whenever a spell you control deals damage, you put a flame counter on it. And you can pay 1, remove a flame counter from it to exile the top card of your library, and you can play that card this turn.
Ooh, I really like this card. I love those kinds of red effects, like the red card advantage effects that are, you have to sort of think about when you're going to activate them. Do you, like, are you playing your land, whatever? Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah. And it's not dealing damage to an opponent. It's just like a burn spell. So when you cast a burn spell, it's going to flip, and then you can start turning their burn spells into 2-for-1s.
I was wondering why we got Immolation instead of Shock or whatever in this format, but it looks like because maybe the cheap burn would be too good. So Immolation's in this format. This is a reprint. It's single red for an aura. Enchanted creature gets +2/-2. So it's sort of like red's way to deal with small creatures. And then it looks like they didn't want it to be an instant or sorcery. Probably would have made this deck maybe a little too good.
We've also got a reprint here in Thermo Alchemist. It got rarity shifted from common to uncommon. So this is 1 and a red for an 0/3. It's now an uncommon. It has Defender. Tap deals one damage to each opponent, and whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you untap Thermo Alchemist.
This was like one of the best decks in Shadows over Innistrad, but it was because you could get this at common. Like, you just load it up on these, and then your Thermo Alchemists were your win conditions.
100%. That deck was annoying to play against.
For sure, yeah. So I'm glad they rarity shifted this, but I imagine that may just be a clue that this card is even better in this format. And then last up, we've got Seize the Storm. So it's 4 and a red for a sorcery at uncommon. You create a red elemental creature token with trample, and this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard, plus the number of cards with flashback you own in exile. And this spell itself has flashback for 6 and a red. That's really interesting. The first time I read this, I was like, oh, this is like experimental overload. But this thing can grow, right? It doesn't have a static power and toughness. It grows as more stuff enters your graveyard or exile zone.
Yeah, this card is significantly better than that. Also, trample tacked on means it can't get chumped. I think this is premium payoff for doing this. And again, points to, like the gold uncommon, a huge density of spells that you want to be playing in blue-red.
Yeah. Ooh, that looks good. I really like when blue-red spells is a well-supported deck in the format, and it looks like it is here.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a powerful format and a very synergistic format from the cards we've seen so far.
Well, that's what we like. That's what we like here at Lords Unlimited. Last up of the gold uncommons that have been spoiled is Flesh Taker. It says Ethan written all over it. White black for a 2/2 human assassin. Whenever you sacrifice another creature, you gain one life and scry one. And you can pay one to sack another creature to have Flesh Taker get +2/+2 until end of turn.
I don't know that I'd want to be associating myself with this card. It's been all the rage on Twitter with this creepy Minotaur art, and then filleting people open. I don't know that I'd want to be staking my claim to Flesh Taker.
Well, I'm a bold man, Ben. What can I say?
Yeah, this is sweet, though, from a Magic the Gathering perspective.
Yeah, this is just like I love sacrifice decks. We talked about it yesterday when we were talking about red black in the Tinkerer's Cube. And if this is the signpost card, I imagine it's well supported. And I prefer, I'm a simple man. I prefer my aristocrats. I prefer my sacrifice stuff to not involve an act of treason effect. And the fact that this exists in white black, I think, leads me to believe that it'll be more about, sacrificing your own stuff synergies rather than stealing and sacrificing.
Yeah, and if Decayed, again, is self-contained in black, could have some zombies floating around as sacrifice fodder, that'd be super cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take some rotting flesh. So that's it for now for the gold signpost uncommons. The rest of them have not been spoiled yet, but we looked at that blue-white deck, and there's another super sweet Disturb card that's been spoiled in Beloved Beggar. What's going on there?
This is 1 and a white for an 0/4 human peasant at uncommon. That's it. Just a 2-mana 0/4. But it has Disturb for 4 white-white. So for 6 mana, you can cast it from your graveyard as a Flying Vigilance 4/4. And it has that same Disturb text. If it goes to the graveyard, you exile it instead. I mean, so like the front side of that isn't great. And it's also kind of hard for that to die because it's 4 toughness. But like, as Ben was talking about, like, imagine just pitching that to Faithful Mending or getting it milled off of the 2/1, the Devoted Graph Keeper, or sacrificing it to your Flesh Taker. Like, looks like it's going to be highly synergistic here to try and get that sort of quote unquote free 4/4 Flying Vigilance.
Yes. Like, looking at this card and all these other cards spoiled right now, I don't know. I think, I said initially that I didn't really like Innistrad that much, and I think that's still true, but I do remember really enjoying the Graveyard Matters things, like flashback and, milling yourself to do things from your graveyard. Just the graveyard being a relevant zone adds so much more depth to the gameplay and strategy.
Yes, for sure. Like, that as an additional resource or way to accrue resources really makes the game, I think, a lot more fun. And again, it tacks on what we were talking about yesterday with the Cube episode of, like, all these limited mechanics like Learn Lesson or whatever, that they add to the potential for you having games, right? You're just not going to have non-games a lot of the time when you have all these places to put mana or ways to get resources. And that excites me about, like, looking at Disturb and Flashback.
So we've gone through a lot of powerful cards. We've also seen some premium removal spells spoiled here. We've got a reprint of Clear Shot, which is 2 and a green for an instant. Target creature you control gets +1/+1 until end of turn. It deals damage equal to its power to target creature you don't control. This card is going to be nuts and a super high pick.
Well, it's just like Hunter's Mark, effectively, right? From AFR, except it's one cheaper, which is kind of crazy because when this card was the best uncommon in Shadows over Innistrad, or one of the best uncommons, and now we're just like, it's a 1 mana cheaper. Hunter's Mark or whatever. Like, it's still, it's going to be nuts, but I wonder if it's going to, if our memory of the card is going to like not serve us super well in terms of evaluating it today.
I think this card is premium, like super solid BB+.
All right. Well, let's take a look at this next removal spell. We've got Defenestrate, 2 and a black for an instant at common, destroy target creature without flying.
Did you know, I looked this up, Defenestrate actually means to throw someone out a window? That's like the meaning of the word.
Oh, well, the art would definitely depict that for sure.
Yeah, and it's flavorful. Destroy target creature without flying. So this is good. How good is it? How much of a drawback is this not being able to kill creatures with flying?
This seems pretty good to me. I mean, usually at the most, like in terms of looking at commons and uncommons, what, 20% of the creatures like have flying or can gain flying? So this being able to kill 80% of threats, that's really good for a common.
Yes, but flying ones typically are ones that you need to kill.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I don't know. I think this is going to be a good removal spell. I just wonder how annoying it's going to be to not be able to kill flyers.
I would be shocked if like it means, I don't know, that the second one has diminishing returns. Maybe the third one.
Are you running 3? Are you running 4, you know?
Yeah. I mean, am I running 3 removal spells ever? No. Come on. but yeah, I would say 2 feels like a good spot to be at with this card.
So moving on to some sweet uncommons. We've got Foul Play, 1 and a black for a sorcery. Destroy target creature with power 2 or less, and then Investigate, which is make that clue token that you can sack to draw a card.
That's ridiculous. This
card is bonkers.
There's a lot of Doomblade draw cards in this format. The other really sweet uncommon removal spell is Infernal Grasp. 1 and a black for an instant. Destroy target creature, you lose 2 life.
There's going to be a whole generation of players saying dies to Infernal Grasp.
Yeah, that's fair. Ushering in the new generation. So we've got like some clear ideas about what Black gets in terms of some premium looking removal. We know green is getting this good bite spell at uncommon. Well, we talked a little bit about the candle trap white's like, you know, pacifism effect. We'll look at that in depth a little bit down the road. And then we'll get to see what burn spells red is offered. What does blue get? Blue gets a claustrophobia variant. What's going on there?
We've got Locked Inside the Cemetery, which is 1 and a blue for an aura, enchant creature. When Locked Inside the Cemetery enters the battlefield, if there are 5 or more cards in your graveyard, tap enchanted creature. Enchanted creature doesn't untap during its controller's untap step.
Yeah, this made me think of Unquenchable Thirst from Hour of Devastation, right? This was the 1 and a blue effect like this, but the clause to be able to tap it when you cast it was if you had a desert in player in your graveyard. And so I wonder is this a clue to self-mill being a thing? You know, there was one of the most popular things in original Innistrad block was blue having this self-mill mechanic or this self-mill theme. And we've got some clues that we may be getting a little clear the mind or spider spawning loop-de-loop shenanigans with a couple other cards.
You have my attention.
Okay, so first up, we've got Covetous Debtor, which is 1 and a blue for a 1/3 human at uncommon. When it dies, you mill 3 cards. Okay, that's not great. But it has disturbed 3 blue-blue, so you can cast it from your graveyard for 5 mana as a 3/4 flyer. And when it enters the battlefield, shuffle up to 3 target cards from your graveyard into your library. So we've got a little bit of, maybe you can mix some stuff in from your graveyard into your library, start like stacking your deck or you know, seeding your deck with just total gas.
Sounds sweet. There's also Turn the Earth, which is green for an instant. Choose up to 3 target cards in graveyards. The owner of those cards shuffle them into their libraries. You gain 2 life, and then it has flashback 1 and a green.
So for folks who don't know, there was like, yeah, so spider spawning is this spell that made a 1/2 spider with reach for each creature card in your graveyard, and it had flashback as well. Its flashback cost was black, but it really was like the only black mana you would play in a blue-green self-mill deck. And then you had these cards that allowed you to, I think it was like Memory's Journey, shuffled 3 cards in from your graveyard to your library, and it had flashback. And then there was Runic Repetition, which was this spell that allowed you to take a card with flashback from exile and put it into your hand. And so with those cards, you could go infinite. You would never deck. And you got to stack your library, and you had a card like Gnaw the Bone, which allowed you to gain 2 life for each creature card in your graveyard, and that had flashback. And Turn the Earth feels like it's doing a little, like sort of 2 things there. Like the little bit of life gain reminds me of Gnaw the Bone, and then the shuffle up effect reminds me of Memory's Journey. And I just have my fingers crossed that this is gonna be a viable strategy, and also maybe that we see Runic Repetition as a reprint.
That would be super sweet. And these are blue-green. We haven't seen the blue-green gold uncommon yet. Like, maybe this is just blue-green's thing.
I know. That would be so awesome. Super, super sweet. And speaking of super sweet, there are a few good-looking build-arounds, which has got me excited, especially after coming off of AFR where there weren't really that many. First up, we've got Ominous Roost. It says 2 and a blue for an enchantment at uncommon. When it enters the battlefield or whenever you cast a spell from your graveyard, create a 1/1 blue bird creature token with flying, and this creature can block only creatures with flying. So it's not going to be like a spider spawning thing that allowed you to like turtle up with all these tokens, but this seems like a really good payoff.
Yeah, this is excellent with all the flashback and disturb running around, and and you get the 1/1 when you cast it, so you're not doing nothing the turn you cast it necessarily. I mean, they can only block creatures with flying, but getting the ball rolling is huge.
Agreed.
We've also got Ghoulish Procession in black. It's 1 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever one or more non-token creatures die, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token with decayed. This ability triggers only once each turn. So potentially in blue-black, you know, to get you some decayed zombies. Also potentially good with the Flesh Taker, right?
Yeah.
You're gonna be sacking stuff anyway to get yourself double fuel with all your sacrifice things.
Oh, I'm so I'm excited. We got some brewing going on. And our last sweet-looking build around is Gavani Dawnguard. 1 white-white for a 3/3. Human Soldier at uncommon. It has Ward 1. And this is one of those cards we talked about, like, you know, night and day not only existing with werewolves, but we've got it here. It says if it's neither day or night, it becomes day as Gavani Dawnguard enters the battlefield. Whenever day becomes night or night becomes day, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card with mana value 3 or less from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So this is super interesting, right? Like, you not casting spells or casting 2 spells with just this in play and no other werewolves is not going to trigger day or night flipping, right?
Correct. There needs to be a werewolf on the battlefield.
But this does incentivize you to like pair it with, I would assume, green or red to get those werewolves so that then you can like try and do the flipping stuff as often as possible to get this card advantage.
Yeah, I think super sweet engine potentially.
Yeah.
So speaking of daybound, nightbound cards, we've got Fangblade Thief. This is 3 and a red for an uncommon human werewolf. It's a 3/4 on the front side and has 1 and a red, gets +1/+0 and gains first strike until end of turn, and then has daybound. So it's going to be day when it comes into play. On the backside with nightbound, you've got a 4/5 with the same activated ability, gets +1/+0 and gains first strike until end of turn for 1 and a red. It can also pump your whole team for 4 and a red and give creatures you control +2/+0, including itself, until end of turn.
Holy cow, that is huge.
Yeah, it's very, very aggressive.
So something that I remember from Innistrad and from werewolves is that activated abilities on these cards are generally super sweet since they let you do something for your turn while also flipping your werewolves, right? So you're saying like, okay, I'm not going to affect the board because I want no spells to have been cast this turn so I can make it night, but I don't want to light all my mana on fire, to use our patented Lords of Limited phrase. So I have something to do here. I can pump 1 and a red into this, give it +1/+0 in first strike, and still reap the benefits of it flipping.
Yeah, very strong. And I think it's worth noting, if both of you have werewolves, you and your opponent, it's going to be really interesting with the day-night thing. Like, if you're in a werewolf's mirror, is it more beneficial for you or your opponent to have it be night? Because when it's night, everything's going to come in on the backside, which is just going to power up the game so much.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's a couple other like mana sinky wolves we've seen so far. First up is Snarling Wolf. This is green for a 1/1 at common, and you can pay 1 and a green to have it get +2/+2 until end of turn, but activate only once each turn.
Yeah, threat of activation on that's going to be real. And as you alluded to, places to put your mana when you're trying to make it day or night. I guess you're trying to make it night when you don't do anything. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, we've seen effects like this before. I do think it's a lot worse tacked on to a 1/1 than a 2/2, right? There was Dark Thicket Wolf in OG Innistrad, which is 2 mana for a 2/2. And then it had the same activated ability, but it was only for 2 and a green. But sneaking in the 1 damage is significantly less good than sneaking in the 2 damage.
Agreed. Dark Thicket Wolf was insane.
Yeah.
We've also got Pestilent Wolf. This is 1 and a green for a 2/2. Speaking of Dark Thicket Wolf, yeah. Unfortunately, this doesn't get +2/+2. It does have an activated ability, though. So 1 and a green for a 2/2. And if you pay 2 and a green, Pestilent Wolf gains Death Touch until end of turn.
Yeah. Also, another weird one, because like you're going to want to pass with this up on your opponent's turn. right? You usually want to block with a Death Touch thing, not attack with a Death Touch thing.
Right. So you're shifting it to Knight and then potentially playing defense with this card?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this seems like it'll be filler.
Yeah, both of those seem fine, not insane.
Yeah. We got another sort of werewolf lord here with Village Watch. This is 4 and a red for a 4-3 with haste at uncommon and has Daybound. And so the flip side is Village Reavers, which is a 5-4. And it says wolves and werewolves you control have haste. And so, like, not only are the flip cards wolves or werewolves, but so are, like, you know, the Snarling Wolf and the Pestilent Wolf. And I'm sure we'll see other cards in the coming days that fit into this deck as well.
Yeah, I think you're hoping it never becomes Knight if your opponent has this on their side of the battlefield.
It just seems terrifying. Yeah, right, because not only do the werewolves have haste, but they're also coming in on the Knightbound side, and so they're huge.
Right, for sure. Yeah. It's going to be terrifying. And I think if you're not playing werewolves, maybe we're going to see, you know, cheap spells become valuable. Like, mana curve is going to matter, right? Because you definitely want the ability to turn it back to day.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you like the thing that you really want to be able to do as the, I guess, the non-werewolf player is punish your opponent from, like, for not affecting the board, saying, like, hey, I'm going to take a turn off to try and flip all this stuff. And then if you get to just immediately clap back and say, hey, here's two spells, you wasted your turn. That is going to be a really powerful way to tempo them out.
Well, and just the way that this has been reframed from original Innistrad, like the day-night thing, it's way more powerful that it's night than it was to flip a werewolf that's already on the battlefield, right? The fact that they enter on the backside is completely absurd.
Yes. All right, that is going to bring us to our final little segment here, looking at some cards that maybe didn't slot in elsewhere or some cards that I want to talk about specifically. We're going to do our patented edition of Great or Garbage, or did you want to rename this for the Innistrad theme?
I was going to go with Trick or Treat, baby.
All right, we can go Trick or Treat this time. So first up, we're going to look at Lunar Frenzy. This is X and a red for an instant at uncommon. Target creature you control gets +X/+0 and gains first strike and trample until end of turn.
Yeah, my first thought when I look at Lunar Frenzy is that this is pretty busted, right? It's just a better Howl from Beyond for old school fans of Magic.
Yeah, it's the same thing, except it grants first strike and trample, which is huge. And they're really great in tandem. And this, like, scales so well with the game, right? As two mana, this is just going to win you most combats with your creature, right? Just giving it +1/+0 and first strike. That's fine. And then in the late game, this can just, you know, kill your opponent's biggest threat in combat or just kill your opponent out of nowhere in combat.
So what kind of a grade would you give it? I mean, is this a B minus, a B? This feels like a pull into red to me almost.
This seems very powerful. I think this is a big treat for me in terms of trick or treat. So I'm going to go, yeah, I think this is going to be a high pick.
All right, next up, we're going to take a look at Candle Trap again. This is the white removal spell. It's white for an aura. Enchanted creature has Defender. Prevent all combat damage that we dealt by enchanted creature. And then Coven, 2 and a white, sacrifice Candle Trap. Exile enchanted creature. Activate this only if you control 3 or more creatures with different power.
Yeah, so this is our pacifism effect, right? And we've seen this range from, you know, who cares in some sets to, like, hey, this is actually really good. If you think about, like, Dreadful Apathy from Theros Beyond Death or whatever. Where are you at on the spectrum here with Candle Trap?
The density of sacrifice things we've seen makes me nervous about it.
Have we seen a lot of sacrifice stuff other than the white-black uncommon?
No, I guess not.
It just feels like there's a lot of, like, you know, I don't know, disposable or expendable bodies.
You're also going to be able to tap this for those things that care about tapping creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It makes me nervous. It is powerful. And the fact that you're ultimately going to be able to get rid of it once you have Coven is important. But it's also Defender, so it's going to sit there and be able to still be a blocker. So it's not an aggressive removal spell. I don't know. This does not seem premium to me.
Coven is such an interesting mechanic because it's so it's fragile in a way, right? If your deck is built around Coven a little bit and your opponent is aggressive, there's some real tension there of like, I want to trade off so I don't die, but I also want my 2/2 around so that I can get my 3 different powers. Like, that is really tough.
Yes, it's awkward. I think the fact that this leaves your opponent a blocker until you can remove it, I'm pretty off of this card initially as far as valuing it highly. Like, will I play a copy? Sure, probably, but I can't imagine that this is a pull into white at all.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I'm going to go Trick on Candle Trap. Next up, we've got Contortionist Troop. This is X and a green for a 0/0 human at uncommon. It enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it, and it has Coven. At the beginning of your end step, if you control three or more creatures with different powers, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control.
This seems fine. It's not particularly exciting, right? So you spend 5 mana, you get a 4/4. The cute thing is that you can make this whatever power you need to trigger Coven. I don't know. But and then it doesn't trigger until your end step.
I don't know. I feel like this might be like a key to Coven. Like the fact that it's so flexible and lets your stuff grow. Like, and then as like, as you progress the game, you can then drop the counters wherever you want, so you keep having Coven. I think this seems pretty sweet.
Does this make you want to draft a Coven deck? It does not make me want to do that. Like, I could see this being C+-ish, like, going to be a good card if you're already doing the Coven thing.
In Trick or Treat, you got to make a stand, Ben. You can't say C+, okay? It's Trick or it's a Treat.
Well, but it's like a medium-tasting treat. Okay, so it's a treat, but it's like not like the houses that give out the Hershey's like bars. It's like
a York peppermint patty.
Yeah, it's like the crappy, you know, people that just have like Jolly Ranchers and like a bunch of bad-tasting candy.
It's better than that.
It's better than a Jolly Rancher?
Yeah, that's basically a trick right there. I don't know. I think this is good. I'm going treat on Contortionist Troop.
I'm going treat, but it's not the primo treats.
Okay. There's a lot going on with this next card.
Yeah, this is Heirloom Mirror. One and a black for an artifact. One tap, pay one life, discard a card. You draw a card, mill a card, then put a ritual counter on Heirloom Mirror. Then if it has three or more ritual counters on it, remove them and transform it. Activate only as a sorcery. Holy cow.
So a lot of text that effectively says you get to rummage 3 times with this, but also a little upside from the mill yourself as well.
Yeah, and then it flips into Inherited Fiend, which is a 4/4 demon with flying, 2 and a black, exile target creature from a graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter on Inherited Fiend. That is quite the payoff for jumping through the hoops.
That's a treat, right? That's a Snickers bar right there.
Yeah, but you had to discard 3 cards along the way. I guess you're losing.
You're rummaging.
Yeah. And you're milling, and the milling's probably a benefit. So in installments, you're ending up paying 5 mana. This card's just good, right? This is a treat.
This card is really good. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, this card is definitely a treat. This is literally the first time I've seen this card, and it is wow.
I think a lot of people are going to underrate this card. Like, it's going to look slow or whatever, and the front side has a lot of text. I think this is going to be pretty darn underrated at the start of the format.
Yeah, there's no way to get ritual counters on it. So this is the thing. There's no cheating. If it's going to be like on delay, I don't know. Is this that good?
Yes.
Yes, but it's not going to be like happening on turn 5, right? Because you don't want to play off curve once you play this on turn 2. I don't know.
No, you can play. Yeah, sure. If you have a 2-drop in your hand, play that instead. But sometimes you don't.
Right. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, this is more likely to be happening on turn 7, turn 8, because you're just not going to have an extra mana to spend every turn once you play this.
Maybe. I don't know. Then that's good for you. I don't know what you're describing a scenario where you're tapping out every turn doing other stuff. That's also good.
Yes.
That doesn't make this card bad.
I agree. There's just a lot to process with this card. I'm coming around to it. I mean, I still think it's a treat, but I'm less high on it than I was 30 seconds ago or whatever.
Why?
Because I think it's a little slow, and I think the one, like, if it was just tap, pay a life, discard a card, it would be ridiculous, right? If you looted for free. The fact that you have to spend a mana, I think, is real.
Okay. I don't think that's going to be that big of a downside. I feel like you can usually find a mana.
I think so. This card's good. I agree. It's good.
Next up, we've got Pure Flame Dragon. This is 3 red for a 4/3 flying creature at uncommon. And when it attacks, it deals 1 damage to target creature defending player controls. But if that creature is a zombie, deals 2 damage to it instead.
Ooh, that zombie fire, that pure fire.
That pure fire. I don't know. I feel like we've seen cards like this enough, like these like sort of medium statted 5 mana flyers with these whatever on attack effects. I don't think this is that good. I think this is going to be overrated.
Ooh, you're going trick.
I think this is going to be a bit of a trick.
I don't know. That's a tough sell.
Maybe the 4 power pushes it over. And maybe like if it were a 3/3, it would be less good. And the 4 power makes it good. And we haven't seen like, I guess, what the removal is. Like, this is going to trade down on mana a lot against removal.
It doesn't die to Defenestrate. It depends on what the removal spells at common are, right?
Right. Yeah, that's definitely true. Right. Does red get a deal 3 for whatever 2 or 3 mana?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm initially coming in on treat, like a conservative treat. Like, mm-hmm. better than a Jolly Rancher, still worse than a Hershey's bar.
Okay, okay.
But again, I agree. We've seen similar cards that look like, oh my god, this is insane, but it ends up underperforming a little bit.
Right. That's my fear or worry about the card, but maybe the four power pushes it over the edge.
Last up here, we've got Defend the Celestis. This is 2 green-green for an instant. Distribute 3 +1/+1 counters among 1, 2, or 3 target creatures you control.
This is a lot of power, but it's also a 4-mana combat trick.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to be using this on offense, right? You don't want to be passing. I mean, theoretically, you could do that with the werewolves, right? So to flip it to knight, you could pass and then your werewolves flip and then you have this. But it's dangerous using this on defense, right? Because your opponent can presumably have their mana up for instant speed interaction. But the fact that it's an instant and you have that option, I guess you'd rather have that than not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's much safer to use this on attacks when your opponent's tapped out.
Also, you could just do it main phase to like trigger coven before combat if you have like the green white uncommon or whatever. I don't know. I'm usually very wary of these cards, but this looks like it might like have enough context, and the flexibility of this is huge. Like normally we've seen, you know, something like incremental growth or whatever that card is, you know, put a counter and then 2 counters and then 3 counters. The fact that you can distribute these however you want at instant speed, that's sort of piquing my interest a little bit.
I agree. This looks super powerful to me. I'm in on treat.
Yeah, I think I'm in on treat on Defend the Celestis as well.
All right.
Well, I'm do one more quick refresh here if we got any more commons or uncommons, and we don't. So I think that'll probably do it.
Yeah, what are you most excited about?
Oof, what am I most excited about? I'm pretty excited about white-blue doing like the flashback and disturb. I'm excited about that. I'm excited. I'm just like fingers crossed for some blue-green loop-de-loop shenanigans. I think that's what I'm most excited about, the prospect of that. How about you?
I think for me, as we've seen things, it's blue-white and then blue-red.
Mm-hmm.
Those both look very sweet to me. And then I'm also fingers crossed for blue-green loop-de-loop stuff. White-black, if there's a sacrifice thing. I don't know. This looks deep.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really excited. I was initially like not writing off, but I was like, where does this Decade stuff fit in? But it does seem like there's a lot of applications, and that might be a cool puzzle to solve of like, you know, how good is it? Where is it at its best, etc.
Well, and it looks like werewolves and green white are pretty pushed to maybe keep all the super sweet dirtily synergies in check. It looks like the format could be great just based on what we've seen so far. I don't know. My curiosity is piqued.
Yeah, agreed. And we'll have the full picture next week, and we'll bring you all those crash course goodies that you know our show for.
All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thanks so much to ChannelFireball.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you're heading over to CFB for any and all purchases or signing up for CFB Pro to read our articles, please use the code LOL at checkout when you do to let them know we sent you there. You can check us out streaming. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Mr. Spell out. We're both under those same usernames on Twitter, and you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
I finally had a podcasting nightmare.
What?
Like, have you ever, like, you know, like the actor's nightmare?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, you're like
you're naked on stage
or
whatever.
Yeah, you're like never, don't know what your lines are or whatever. I had a dream that we were recording, and like, it's just so specific. It was like my Audacity track was in like stereo, not mono, and I like couldn't fix it, and we were already recording, and like my microphone was far away from me and I couldn't get it closer. So no more back-to-back podcasting days.
No more back-to-back podcasting days. Confirmed.
Yeah.